Hey guys, and welcome back to this week's episode of the Bow Hike Podcast. This week, back by popular demand, Aaron Tierney of Tierney Arms Company. He joins me again, and this week we're going over kind of what you guys can do at home yourselves, or you know, have somebody else do for you to really get the full potential out of whatever rifle it is that you're shooting. So we cover just some basic stuff and a little more advanced DIY stuff that that you could do, like I said, at home or have somebody else do for you, that really unlocks that potential of your currently average rifle. So Aaron and I sit down, have a good time, go over what we can do to really just start banging steel, knocking out bullseyes, whatever other cool rifle terms I know. So the Bow Hike Podcast goes rifle again. And I think it's a good one. So guys, tune in and listen up. It's definitely an informational one. Thanks for tuning in, guys. No further, here it is. Aaron Tierney of Tierney Arms. So I'm just starting this podcast unbeknownst to Aaron. He's like inside grabbing gadgets and all kinds of cool stuff that he has to show me to make me jealous. I don't really think it's to make me jealous. It's just because he likes showing me cool stuff. He doesn't know when he comes out here that the podcast will already be started. He like comes out and throws a magazine full of things at me. And now he's going in to get a rangefinder to show me that too. So yeah, I'm going to have Aaron back on today. We're going to do like a do-it-yourself rifle improvement tune-up. Hey Aaron, I was just telling these people that I already started the podcast so that you would be surprised when you got back. So surprise, podcast has already started.
Surprise.
Okay. So you guys have heard Aaron before on the Tierney Arms Company episode. So Aaron is back by popular demand to go over, I mean, like this wasn't the requested episode. But we thought it'd be cool since the seasons are kind of dwindling down and we're like in rifle seasons mostly now. And this is like the time of year that I personally start messing with my stuff and trying to get stuff ready for like, I don't know, spring bear season or because shoot guns on rocks now that there's no
it's something to do. Yeah,
fire season. Well, it's, I mean, you probably shouldn't do it now, it's still super dry.
Yeah.
Don't do that. But anyways, Aaron's back. Aaron, sup?
Not a whole lot. For those of you that don't know me, I am a machinist. I work for a company. We manufacture OEM gun parts for other companies and top secret stuff.
Yeah, super secret.
And then in my free time, I make cool stuff for myself and my friends and you guys that are listening.
Yeah, custom rifles.
And yeah, we thought it would be pretty pertinent to talk about some tips that you can do in the off season to kind of get your rifle in tip-top condition for...
Oh, that's annoying. What is this thing doing?
Whatever you have left.
Sorry, Aaron.
Oh, that's okay.
Go ahead.
Anyway, safety first. I shouldn't have to say this, but you know what? Murphy's Law, right? Mm-hmm. What can go wrong will go wrong. Always unload and treat it like it's loaded. Follow all your manufacturer's instructions and recommendations. And don't try things yourself. Seek professional help. And use proper tools. I see this all the time. Like people think, oh, I got this rusty old Stanley flathead screwdriver, that'll work, and then they just mar up their screws and then they can't come out and it's a mess. So get the right tools for the job.
I'm gonna have to do that. I use super rusty Stanley tools.
Ooh, fail.
Yeah. Hey, it's part of living the homeless life. So yeah, so we are gonna go over some of your like, what can you do to make your rifle more accurate? So this is kind of geared towards somebody who, like myself previously, has your average, I don't know, what, three to, I guess now rifles are getting pretty cheap for a good rifle, like $350 to $600.
Yeah, for like an average. It's pretty amazing what you can get for your money these days.
Yeah.
It's very impressive what they're able to turn out at such a low cost. It's like a renaissance for accuracy and rifle shooting. It's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, so for people with average, like I mean,
I don't want to get in your personal business, but if you're like me, you got like an average or less than average income. You've got an average rifle, an average scope, like nothing out of the, you know, like I always see these things that crack me up when people are like, oh, budget rifle build, and then it still costs $1,500. Like, to a lot of people, that is not a budget rifle.
Yeah.
Right? To a lot of people...
It's somebody's budget.
Yeah, it's somebody's budget, right? Yeah. But to a lot of people, when they, when they're like looking up a budget rifle, like a bare bones budget rifle, you're talking like, I don't know, like a Ruger American or a Savage Axis or like a Savage, what's the 12, the Model 12 from Cabela's?
Yeah, there's the 10, the 11, the 12, and it just depends on like,
I mean, like
stainless or right hand or left hand, stuff like that.
Right, so let's just go like, I don't know, average rifle, $600 or less, average scope, a few $100. So yeah, you're under $1,000 rifle. Like what you can do to take that rifle to the next level with minimal tools, minimal experience, even though you're definitely playing caution to Aaron's disclaimer, you're not doing it yourself.
Yeah.
I'm air quoting right now.
Well, I wouldn't maybe not say the next level, but actually like make it to its full potential. Let's say that.
Yeah, take it to its full potential.
Yeah, because you would be completely blown away with what these inexpensive factory rifles can do.
Right.
And you could use these tips on anything really, but let's just say for the sake of this podcast, you went to Bi-Mart and or Cabela's or Sportsman's Warehouse,
big box store,
and you bought that package deal, that Savage with a Nikon or a Remington with like a Bushnell scope or something like
okay.
that.
Okay. Cool.
I personally, I clean it thoroughly. Like I take everything apart because there's tons and tons of grime and crap in there that comes from the manufacturing process. You'd be amazed when you run a patch down the barrel for the first time, before shooting it, what comes out. Like it's a brand new barrel. It's never, well, they do actually fire it at the factory. They test it, but man, there's so much junk in there. And, I'm pretty picky. The barrel is like the heart of the accuracy, and you definitely don't want to like ram a bunch of crud down there from the get go and just never, ever have it be at its potential, and not know it. But now that you know that, clean it really good. I like to use a Jag. I don't know if you're familiar with those.
Yeah, that's what I use.
But it's basically just a round piece of brass that is a little bit undersized, your bore diameter, and it actually pushes a patch through, instead of those slotted patch holders where you just put a patch through the slot and then run it back and forth. I always run things from the breech out the muzzle. You don't want to run it back and forth because the bullet doesn't go back out the breech, right?
Right.
You don't want to run any of that stuff back into your action. I always like to run it from the breech, push it out, take the patch off, and then pull the rod back through. I even like to use a bore guide, and that's maybe something a lot of guys aren't familiar with, but they're really cheap. They run like $10-$15 up to like $50. It just depends on what you get. Some are just plastic and they're really simple. Some are machine billet aluminum and they're really complex. It doesn't really matter. It just matters that it fits in your action and that it allows the cleaning rod to pass through without touching the rifling. So really the only thing that's touching the rifling when you're cleaning it is the patch or the Jag on the end of your rod that is made out of brass and it's soft. It's not going to...
Right. Do you have like a... Because a lot of people may have never cleaned their rifles this way. So do you have like a preferred rod? Do you use any like the coated ones?
No.
I know the ones that come like out of the little wooden box that you get, those things in my experience are kind of trash. Like especially with a Jag. I have a handy dandy crescent wrench that I smack the back of my rod with to push the Jag and the patch through. Because it's, you know, those
it's
things
really
are tight. Yeah. And that, at least in my 25-06, it's super tight like that. So I have a real nice rusted shut crescent wrench that's good for nothing else.
There you go.
So that's my it's my hammer for the rod. But is there? I just use like your average, I don't know, $20 or $30 store bought rod. I broke the handle off it and I replaced it with a big washer.
There's a company called Pro Shot, and I'm seeing them more and more like in the big box stores, and they're about $30-$35 for a rod. And that sounds kind of shocking, but if you get the right rod, you can use it on all your guns, so it's not that big of a deal. And they're pretty indestructible. I mean, they got machined billet aluminum handles, and they have ball bearings in them. And the big thing, though, is the rod itself. It's micro-polished, so it's taken down to this really smooth surface that's not going to, like, embed those metal particles from, like, the jacket of the bullet. some of those coated rods. Like, some people argue that they'll soften with solvents and that particles will embed and they'll be like running a file down there. There's all kinds of arguments. And me personally, I like those Pro Shot rods because of that really fine polish finish that they have. It's pretty much guaranteed that you're not going to run stuff down your barrel that you don't want to run down there. And then your patches being really tight with your Jag, have you tried cutting them?
The patches?
Yeah.
No.
If they're really, if they're that tight, you got to smack it with a crescent wrench. I'd probably like cut, you know, like a quarter of an inch off the edge of a patch.
So it's not a good idea to smack your...
Yeah, so it's a little bit tight. I mean, if you're smacking it, your rod's probably bending with the force. You
yeah,
know?
Probably.
And that's kind of, you want to avoid, like I said, the rod contacting the bore.
Mm-hmm.
Don't
do that.
Yeah. I have seen too, different Jags from different manufacturers seem to be tighter, or more loose. So it might take a little trial and error to find the right Jag. And there's tight bore too. Like, I have a Savage, 300 Win Mag, that has a really tight bore. And, for whatever reason, that's just the way it came. It's got a factory barrel on it. I have a 308 Savage, and the bore is nowhere near as tight. And I mean, we're only talking a couple tenths of a thousandth of an inch, like the tiniest little bit. But it makes a difference. So you might have to mess around with like cutting your patch down to size or finding a Jag that might be a little bit smaller or bigger, whatever. It's just all part of the fun though, is getting all your kit, getting all your gear together, getting the right stuff.
Yeah.
And doing it the right way, getting the right tool for the job.
What about bore snakes? Use those things?
Yeah, those are awesome.
Yeah, I love mine.
And you don't have to clean your gun all the time, contrary to belief, too. You could shoot your gun all year and not have to clean it. But we're just talking about getting the rifle from
right.
the get-go.
Getting ready, getting it started.
Yeah, so. There's a lot of things that we're going to skip over because we just want, for time's sake, like we can do a whole podcast just about cleaning your rifle properly.
Probably.
Maybe in the future.
Maybe in the future.
But for now, we'll just skip over that. We'll just focus on, like, from the get-go. Clean okay. it really good.
Clean it really good.
Use the right tools. what were you saying? You had a thought?
No, it didn't have anything to do with cleaning.
Okay. those scopes, they're only bore-sided on those like, package deals.
Right.
Or say you didn't buy a package. You bought your own rings and bases. I like to Loctite everything.
Yeah.
Because there's so much violence that is happening when you're shooting that rifle. I mean, the recoil energy, the vibrations, the shock waves, everything. And it tends to loosen parts up. So Loctite is your best friend. There are different types of Loctite. If you don't know, you want to use Loctite number 243, medium strength blue. Don't use the red. You will lock your parts together and they will never come apart. Unless that's what you want.
Well, those I think the red comes apart if you're like super lucky.
If you're super lucky and you put a little bit of heat to it and you have good fasteners, because a lot of the fasteners that come
just
with
break them.
Those factory rifles are soft. They don't have the right temper or heat treatment, and they'll either just strip the heads right off or they'll just turn right out of
shear
there.
Shear the head off. What the black stuff's the like real nasty Loctite.
Yeah, there is rock set too.
Yeah, it's
which
like
is,
epoxy basically, right?
Yes, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah, don't do that. So blue Loctite, and you do that on your bases, and you clean those threads, I'm guessing.
Yeah, clean them. I like to get some brake cleaner, some carb cleaner, and I just take like a soda can, cut the bottom off, put all my fasteners in there, dump a bunch of carb cleaner on it, swish it around. If you got like some shop air, just dump them out on a rag and just blow that stuff off with some air, or just let it dry completely.
Yeah.
And then just put a little dab of Loctite and put everything together. A good torque wrench.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have one of those.
Inch pound torque wrench.
Yeah. And I looked around because Wheeler Engineering has that fat wrench, that yellow one. Everybody's probably seen it.
I have one.
They're awesome. And with a lot of products like that, being from the machining industry like I am, like you notice a lot of products that are developed for, you know, industrial use kind of trickle down into the commercial market. And I was dead set. I was like, I'm going to find one of these torque wrenches from one of these industrial supply companies, and I guarantee it's going to be just like that fat wrench, and I'll get it for like $20, right?
Yeah.
And I went on this quest, and it took me weeks looking around, and I came to the conclusion that fat wrench is the best deal you can get.
Yeah.
I mean, the ones that they offer from industrial supply stores and stuff like that are literally twice as much as a fat wrench, if not more. Huh. And that fat wrench, it works. It's accurate.
Yeah. Mine's like two, I don't know. They say it's like a couple pounds off here or there, but like, yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. As long as you're just doing it to the same, you know, like right. you're using the same fat wrench every time. But really, if you do this properly and you clean all your stuff and you Loctite it, the chances of having to take it apart later are virtually nil. I mean, unless you like completely knock your rifle like down a cliff or something.
Or you want to change stuff out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That being said, the bases, you want to go like 20 inch pounds. The rings, you want to go 30 inch pounds. Again, I like to clean the actual metal surfaces too.
Yeah.
Between the receiver and the scope base and the scope ring. And if you've got good quality scope rings, like, you know, like some Leopold scope rings or some, I want to say Night Force, but those are like getting really high.
What about like Burris? I like the Burris signature rings. They're like $50.
Burris is really good.
Which, I mean, they're going to be pricey, you know, but those signature rings are cool because for a lot of people that eliminates the need for a 20-minute base if you want to shoot longer stuff.
Yeah.
Because they have the shims in there for 5, 10, and 20, I think.
And if you're going to be shimming them and stuff too, then definitely lap it.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I was going is if you get good rings, I've noticed that you don't need to lap them. Or the lapping is very little.
Right.
And
can you explain lapping? People don't know what it is. If they don't know what it is.
So you get basically a bar that is the diameter of the scope tube. And you put this abrasive compound around it, and you just run it back and forth until the high spots are taken out of the rings. So basically, you have more contact the rings to the scope itself, but also it eliminates stress that might be, you know, imparted on the scope tube when you tighten them down.
Mm-hmm. So that helps with the scope not coming loose, for one, and then two, probably with your tracking, right?
It helps with the tracking. It helps with your scope not coming loose. Because it has more grip.
Right.
And then one of the things I wanted to talk about too was the expansion and contraction rates of your scope bases. I actually was just talking to a friend about that. You have steel bases, aluminum scopes, aluminum bases, steel receivers, all this stuff. Aluminum, it's a big heat sink. It absorbs heat or cold a lot faster than steel does. It does it at a faster rate, so it takes less time for it to cool down or heat up to whatever the ambient temperature is, right?
Right.
Than it will for the receiver, which is going to be made out of steel. And another thing about the aluminum is it expands at a greater rate. So once the components are all to the same temperature, the aluminum will have expanded a little bit more than the steel will. So anyway, what I was talking about with my friend, he had a steel base and some aluminum rings.
Right.
And he mounted them when it was, you know, in his house is like 65, 70 degrees or whatever, room temperature. He went out to shoot. It was cold. It was like 30, 40 degrees. And that steel base, it didn't contract as much as the aluminum did. And so his rings became loose, and he was shooting all over the place, and it was driving him crazy, and he finally realized that his scope rings were loose on his base. So once he was able to figure that out. But that's one thing that I think really frustrates people is loose fasteners. And again, yeah. It goes back to Loctite. But even in that scenario, when you have these dissimilar metals and you Loctite them together, it still doesn't account for if you put it together at a certain temperature and then went out and it's blistering hot out or freezing cold out or whatever. So you always need to check the tension of the fasteners and
right.
back to the torque wrench.
Mm-hmm.
I like to use, if I'm using aluminum rings, I like to use an aluminum base.
Okay.
Scopes are always aluminum. They don't make steel scopes anymore. They might, maybe like, you might be able to find one somewhere, but pretty much they're all the scopes are aluminum. You don't seem to, you can use steel bases on an aluminum scope tube and you don't seem to get the same effect that you would if you had aluminum bases on a steel, or aluminum rings on a steel base.
Right.
Is there anything you want to add?
Now, isn't there some sort of, like, is electrolysis the word I'm looking for between steel and aluminum, like where they can actually end up stuck together?
Yeah, aluminum will oxidize. That's why it's anodized.
Okay. So that'd be raw aluminum and raw steel.
Yeah, right? And you can, I mean, yeah, that sometimes the oxidation, the anodizing could be rubbed off.
Right.
And you can get oxidation. The steel of the rifle itself could rust depending on the coating that's on it. Like some just, you know, they're blued, and that's just like a controlled rust process. And if you don't, keep some sort of rust inhibitor between the two. Yeah. And I think we touched on it just a minute ago, cleaning the surfaces before you mate them together.
Mm-hmm.
So cleaning any sort of, contaminant that might cause the steel of the action to oxidize or the aluminum to oxidize and bond together.
And now, not to get people screwing stuff up. Sorry, I just thought about this. When you clean the screws and stuff, you clean them with brake clean.
Mm-hmm.
You probably don't want to clean your receiver with brake clean.
You can. I wouldn't hose it with brake clean, but I mean...
Get like, a little on a rag?
A little on a rag.
Will that hurt, like, Cerakote or bluing or anything like that?
It won't hurt Cerakote. Bluing, it might discolor it until you put oil on it again.
Okay.
But it's not going to, like, it's not going to permanently damage it.
Right.
Or etch it. Like, stuff like vinegar, things that...
Bug spray.
Yeah.
For some reason, bug spray destroys a ton of stuff.
Sweat, stuff like that. But, put a thin film of oil or grease on there and be diligent. Like, a little bit goes a long way. But keep up on the maintenance. Like, do that after a hunt. You might just spray it with some WD or whatever kind of, like, action cleaner, lubricant, CLP. That you like to use.
I just take a little shot of Rem Oil on a rag and wipe my guns down. Every once in a while, I just think about it. Like, I'm in the house and I'm all, maybe I should go wipe these guns down. So I open up the safe, spray some oil on a rag, wipe all the guns down. Just because, like, why not? Pull the bolt out real quick, wipe it down.
Yeah.
Wipe down the outside of my gun.
I like to get those M16 brushes. They're super cheap. It's like a toothbrush.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll dump Rem Oil on them and then I'll scrub them. And then I'll just wipe it off, or I'll dump some more Rem Oil and wipe it off.
Yeah.
It's okay to get them dirty and nasty and stuff like that. Just, you know, clean them and maintain them when you're done. That's really what it's about.
Is it getting super in the weeds on the scope mounting if you are, like, I know if you were to Google search, like, how to mount a scope, or YouTube search it, say, right? How to mount a rifle scope.
Mm-hmm.
First off, look, I mean, not to dog on anybody, but you probably want to look for a pretty professional-looking video. There's a good one that Randy Newberg does. It's sponsored by Leopold. He does a good one. But I remember somewhere watching a guy betting his scope base. Mm-hmm. You do that?
I have before, yeah.
So that's something you could do by yourself?
Yeah.
You look that up on YouTube?
It's kind of a case-by-case basis, too.
Sometimes they're not.
Sometimes they need it, and sometimes they don't. It really depends on the components that you buy. Some actions, like Remington's, the back receiver ring is flat, and they don't, like, mill it flat, and it's not, like, a precise thing. They just grind it flat, and they have a guy at a station, like, grinding it till it looks nice. And so I've seen a lot of one-piece Remington bases that one side is high and you need to either shim it, and they make shims for that, or you can use some bedding compound, like some Brownells Acroglass, or you can even use some JB Weld.
Yeah, I've used that for welding or for bedding recoil lugs.
Yeah.
And my scope base.
It works really good. I think JB Weld probably has the strongest tensile strength out of all of those. There's DevCon, which seems to be really popular now, which is basically just like JB Weld.
It's epoxy. Yeah, two-part epoxy.
Two-part epoxy. Some of them have, like, a steel fill in there, which would be better. You could really go down the rabbit hole on epoxies and bedding compounds and stuff like
that,
too.
Dude, we have so many rabbit holes.
There's a lot of rabbit holes.
Yeah, we're going to break legs running around here. So, what you got next on your list? Aaron did his homework, by the way, like... He studied on this. Since we've been talking about this episode for 2 months, he had a lot of time. So we got, and then, so now, man, I'm bad at this today. I just like drank a whole cup of coffee.
Oh, it's good, dude.
So I'm kind of wired
We're
up.
We're kind of all over the place here too.
So let's see. We got the scopes. We just bedded that. We lapped them. We got went over torque. So I think we got the scope squared away.
Well, you definitely want to level your reticle.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
That's a huge one. That is such a big one. So 3 degrees of cant, like, doesn't sound very much. Like, you can't even, most people can't even notice that.
That's a play on words.
3 degrees of cant, yeah.
And they can't even notice
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well done, dude.
So that will equal 4.5 inches of windage at 500 yards.
Wow.
3 degrees.
Wow.
And 3 degrees is literally, like, it's such a small amount. Like, most people would not be able to pick that up. It'd be very easy to get at least 3 degrees off, if not more. And depending on your scope offset, too. So you want to get your scope down as low to the bore axis as you can. Obviously, without the scope touching the rifle barrel.
Right.
The lower, the better, because that scope, that sight offset, it's going to change your ballistics. Again, it will change that cant if you don't have your reticle leveled. So it really does a lot of bad things by having your scope up high, unless it's just that uncomfortable for you to, you know, not have it down low. You can still work with that, but I definitely recommend mounting it down low, leveling the reticle. I've seen guys use like plumb bobs.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that probably works if you have a higher end scope, but the chances of the reticle itself being level to the actual adjustments, the windage and elevation of the turrets inside the scope, you know, it could be off a couple of degrees as well. So if you are actually leveling your reticle, and there's some things, I've seen things that like fit in the barrel, a culminator is what they call it, and you look through the crosshairs and you line the crosshairs up with the culminator that's out on the muzzle of your barrel. I don't like to do that personally because, again, if the reticle is not level inside the scope in relationship to the windage and elevation knobs, you're going to be turning windage and elevation knobs and it's going to be moving diagonally because the scope itself is not level.
I get what you're saying. So that flat surface on top of your cap.
On top of your cap.
You're saying that could be level, perfectly plumb level, and your crosshair could have a cant to it.
Yes.
But when you move your turrets, your scope's still going
to
track.
If you like to spin dials, yeah. If you like to spin dials and shoot at distance and spin for your dope, I definitely recommend leveling the turret because the turret is going to move in a horizontal or a vertical axis if you level the turret cap, right?
Right. Now, if you're sighted in and you're... and you get your crosshair level to a plumb, and mm-hmm. you're just going to use, say, like a BDC reticle.
Yeah.
You want to make sure your crosshair's level,
then,
right?
You want to make sure your crosshair's level.
So on most of these lower-end scopes, we're going to assume that you got your factory rifle, factory load, factory, let's say, you know, $150 to $300 Bushnell, Vortex, Nikon, something like that. You're not going to be dialing more than likely.
Yeah, and you might not be shooting past 300 or 400 yards anyway.
Sure.
So
you want to make sure, I guess in that case, we want to get our reticle level. And in a case where we want to twist knobs, we want to get our turrets level.
Yes.
So level the scope to your preference is what we're getting at.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So to get the crosshairs level, you're going to say use a plumb string. That's...
Or one of those culminators.
Okay.
But a cheap way to do it in your house is just to use a plumb bob hanging off your ceiling fan or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
You know? Again, make sure it's unloaded. Don't make sure your gun doesn't go off inside your house.
Take the dang bolt out.
Yes, do that.
Yeah, I do that a lot. If I'm working on a gun, most of the time, I just take that bolt out of there and set it on the table. Then there's no questions. Take the magazine out, take the bolt out.
And just put your ammunition, like, somewhere else where it's not going to, like...
Yeah, because, you know guns, they have a mind of their own. That ammo will fly right in there and that thing will fire without even touching it, because guns are bad.
Magic, yeah. Especially if you live in a liberal neighborhood.
Yeah, guns are awful. You don't want to be shooting into your neighbor's house, so... politics aside,
back to screws too. Here's one that I missed. oh man, fasteners. That's another rabbit hole. Fasteners are like crazy. Anyway, the length and the interference. I see this lot. I see hardware that comes with scope bases that is too long. And you put all your stuff together and try to put your bolt in, and it doesn't go in because there's a screw that's going down into the recess or the pocket where the bolt lug is turning into. Have you dealt with that before?
I've never personally dealt with it, but I know people who have dealt with it.
And a lot of guys, you know, they see something and it's like, you'll get a bigger hammer. Don't be that guy. Grind your screws down or just get shorter fasteners. Brownells is awesome. If you have lots of rifles and stuff, just buy one of their scope mounting hardware kits.
Yeah, those are cool.
And then you'll just have them, man. Like, yeah. It's so convenient. And then your buddies will, like, love you, and you can probably get a bunch of free beer when you take care of their scope mounting needs with all of your scope screws. It's totally worth it.
Yeah, free beer's cool. Plus, you could just, like, fix stuff.
Yeah.
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 That's real neat.
And the same goes for the action screws, too. I have seen action screws, especially if you're changing stocks out, if you're going from, you know, say your factory stock and you got like a Boyd stock or a Bell and Carlson or something like that, and then now your screws are too long, the factory screws are too long, or I've seen them too short as well.
Huh.
But definitely something to be aware of is the length of the fastener and any interference that it might have with any other parts of the rifle.
Yeah.
And then as far as action screws go, one of the things that I don't see anybody ever talking about, especially, you know, like guys that talk about bedding the recoil lug and stuff like that, you don't want any of the circumference of the screw. So like the shank of the screw that's like going down through the stock. You want tons of clearance around the shank of the screw. The only part of the screw you want touching the stock is the head of the screw. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You don't want those screws to bear the brunt of the recoil. That's not what they're meant for. That's what the recoil lug is meant for. And that's why going into the next thing, like bedding the recoil lug, is important to get the right clearances and the distances and maintain that actual clearance around the screw of the action so that it's bedding to the recoil lug and the action and not like hanging up on the screw because the screw's all sitting there and cockeyed and jacked up and stuff.
Right. And there's a lot of methods, guys, to we're just kind of going down the list here due to time constraints, because this would take 5 hours if we told you
proper bedding.
Well, if we told you, I mean, all of the stuff we're talking about. So, you know, if we said, hey, this is a good idea to do on your gun, and then we went through the details of how to do that, each one of these things would take a half hour to 45 minutes to talk about. So basically by saying, hey, you should bed your recoil lug, here's why. There are tons of YouTube videos that are great, right? Have you watched any of them on bedding your rifle?
Yeah, and I kind of try to shy away from it because a lot of people, I've met a lot of people recently that are getting into long-range shooting, and their go-to is like the internet. And it's a double-edged sword because you could get a lot of misinformation.
Right.
There is a lot of good information, and Royce hit the nail on the head earlier. Like, look for videos that are sponsored by legitimate, you know, businesses like Leopold. I'm sure Leopold would not put their name on somebody's, you know, ghetto scope mounting seminar that they did at their kitchen table.
Or just something if you look at a video and it's got 189 thumbs down and like 5 thumbs up, it probably isn't a good video.
And take it for what it is. Like, don't take it as the gospel because you watched one video and form your entire opinion of that particular whatever it might be, you know.
Process.
Yeah. That's the problem that people run into is they watch the first video that pops up, and then they base their opinion because one guy said, oh, well, I use DevCon, and if anybody else uses anything but DevCon, they're stupid.
Right.
And then so automatically their opinion is like, well, DevCon's the only thing that you could use for bedding. Like, you can't use anything else. I mean, and that's maybe, like, a crappy example.
I get what you're saying, though. Watch a few videos on this.
Form your own opinion.
Yeah. Like, say bedding. Go watch a few videos. Take, you know, if you're noticing trends in these videos, like, if every time you're watching the video, somebody tells you to rough up the pocket that your recoil lug sits in so that there's something for the compound to attach to, well, then you should probably go ahead and do that, right?
Yeah.
You're going to notice trends in these videos. And maybe one of these days, Tierney Arms Company is going to put up a video on how to bed your rifle. We'll work on that. That'd be a good one, dude.
That would be a good one.
Yeah, we'll get on that one of these years. So what we're telling you here is what we would advise you to do. And by we, I mean Aaron. I'm just playing off of his intelligence. I'm just like, yeah, rifles, guns. Yeah, I have one. It works. It shoots things. Goes boom. But get on the internet, because encyclopedias don't have this stuff in it. Find the information. Form your own opinion. And do a good job. To people too, take your time. Gunsmiths will probably tell you. If you go in and you're friends with a gunsmith or you know a good gunsmith, just like talk to him.
And if you guys have questions too, like you could message me on Instagram. I try to make myself really available and help you guys out as much as possible.
Yeah.
I'm an open book. I really want to, like, we talked about this in the last podcast. Like, I don't want to be that grumpy old gunsmith that, you know, you have your heart set on something and he, just because he doesn't think that it,
yeah,
you know, I'm not that guy. Don't be afraid to message me. Even if you think it's like some sort of ridiculous, dumb question or something like that. Like, I don't mind, guys. This is my passion. I love this stuff. It's my life, literally. Like,
yeah. Straight up.
So go for it. And yes, trends on some of those videos. I'm sure you could probably find somebody that you know or a friend of a friend that has done it before that can tell you like what not to do.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the whole process too is sometimes messing up. I know messing up your $300 gun is really crappy. But learning that for yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's priceless, man. Learning a skill, that you can do. Sometimes that's worth it. But you definitely don't want to try to mess up your rifle. If you're not certain, seek professional help.
Yeah. So would you say that for the average gun, betting the recoil lug is sufficient to help the accuracy? Are we moving down to the stock now? We're betting the recoil lug?
Yeah. It really depends. Some guns come with better stocks.
Right.
Some stocks are terrible and they're not even worth betting.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest recommendation is to do it incrementally. Do some of these other things like secure your fasteners with Loctite, torque them to the right spec, level your scope. Do all of those things and go out and shoot the gun and see if it shoots to your satisfaction, right?
Right, before you start.
And then an easier thing to do is try different ammunition. And I was going to touch on that a little bit.
Yeah, that was a big one I wanted to get into as well.
To me, in my experience, the two most important things of any firearm with concern to accuracy is the ammunition and the crown. I've seen barrels that are really jacked up inside that are just copper fouling machines because they're so rough. They just leave so much copper. When that bullet goes down, it just rips all this copper off the jacket, deposits it in the barrel. It looks nasty, but I've seen them shoot lights out. Like, I've seen them shoot amazing, and because they have a decent crown. One of the benefits of a custom rifle with a high-end barrel is the interior finish. And we were talking about like that with the cleaning rod.
Yeah.
Like, they're lapped and they're polished and they're super smooth. And so you don't get all that copper fouling, which eventually, when the copper starts building up, will lead to accuracy issues. It'll start changing the pressure. You'll start getting flyers. And then that's when you have to clean it out. But all that aside, having good ammunition is key. Whether you load it yourself or you buy like premium match grade stuff, try different ammo. Buy as much as you can and shoot it and see what shoots good in your rifle.
I wanted to get into that because that's one thing, like, a lot of people think it's 100% necessary to reload your own ammunition to be accurate, and it's not. Especially these days. I mean, like, there's a lot of good ammo out there. Say you have a 308, right, or a 6.5 Camry.
You could buy match ammo anywhere for that.
Yeah, and you're talking, so if you're talking for the 6.5 Camry, you're looking at, what, $30 a box or something?
Even
for
less than that.
Yeah, you could buy five different kinds of ammunition for less than it costs you to go and buy a press to reload yourself.
Yeah.
And if you've just got the one rifle, that's your rifle that you're dedicated to shooting, it's your elk gun, your deer gun, your fun gun, I mean, go buy a few boxes and bag your gun in, make good shots, let your barrel rest between your shots and see what shoots the best and run that and use the rest of it for practicing.
Accuracy is all about consistency. So having a load that burns at the same rate, the bullets themselves weigh the same amount. The cases are similar in construction where, you know, your neck tension and all that stuff is going to be consistent from one shot to the next. That's where you're going to get your accuracy. And then the last part that the bullet actually touches of the rifle, the crown, there's a neat old trick that you could do. If you're familiar with like lapping valves, when you're rebuilding an engine, you're just making a consistent seal around the valve seat. It's a lot like that where you just get a button head screw and smear some lapping compound around it, put it in your drill and just run it at real low speed until you just get a nice, I mean, we're talking like a couple of thousandths of an inch, like a nice little bright ring around, right around the crown of your barrel. You'd be surprised at all the high spots that are on that barrel. And each one of those high spots is going to add additional drag to that side of the bullet as it leaves the barrel. And that's going to put some yaw into the projectile as it leaves. And that's bad for accuracy. So touching up the crown, just kissing it a little bit with a little bit of lapping compound and a button head machine screw would work wonders. But all of these things, again, incrementally, like first start with things that don't change the rifle, you know what I mean? And shoot it and try ammunition and get it to a point where either it's you're okay with where it's at and it's shooting really good. If it's not, then progress to the next step and bed that recoil load and shoot it again and see what's changed.
Right.
Did it change for the good or did it change for the bad? Free floating the barrel. Some of these stocks, the barrel's not free floated. You want to be able to run at least a dollar bill underneath the barrel all the way to the recoil lug. Some guys bed the recoil lug and they like to bed like the first inch or 2 inches of the barrel. That's perfectly fine. That's one of those things you can do incrementally. You can just start with bedding the recoil lug and shooting it. And if it's not shooting as good as you would hope, then you can bed a little bit more down the barrel.
Right.
Every rifle is different. Even if you have like two identical rifles that were like one serial number apart, built on the same day by the same company with all the same stuff, one could just be a serious tack driver and the other one could be a turd.
Yeah, my buddy and his dad had basically, their serial numbers were like 300 apart on accident. Like my buddy bought his gun used from a pawn shop and his dad had bought his new from the factory and they ended up like 300 serial numbers apart, matching guns. So they were built same day, same run. Everything, 300 Win Mags. And with the same load, Chris's gun was running like 120 foot a second faster than his dad's rifle, built on the same exact day in the same factory. Because they actually went and, you know, you could like track the serial number of your gun, find out where it was built, when.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, they were the exact, I mean, built on the exact same day.
And it happens. And the thing is it's a production thing. It's a production line. It's about making it efficiently.
Right.
Time is money, so they have to make it quickly.
Right.
And some things get passed over, or there's an acceptable tolerance, and one rifle might have been spot on, you know. It's got a really tight tolerance, and the other one was 5 or 10 thou off. We talked about that on the last podcast.
If you guys haven't heard that, I think it's maybe episode five or six. I think six.
Six?
I think six. It's Anatomy of a Precision Rifle with Tierney Arms Company. Go check that out if you want to hear some cool stuff. Aaron nerded out pretty hard on guns on that episode. It's pretty sweet.
Yes.
So definitely check that one out.
And let us know if you have questions about this stuff. And, you know, if all else fails, like I said, get a hold of me.
Get a hold of Aaron.
Or, you know, if that's not convenient, if, you know, like geographically or somewhere else, you know, ask around, you know, who's a good gunsmith to go to? Mm-hmm. Who do you trust? It's like tools, man. Like, I don't let anybody borrow my tools. I don't want anybody to have my rifle.
Yeah.
I'm kind of picky. Anyway, back into the...
what else you got over there on your list of things?
I really like that podcast you did about Don't Be That Guy. I got a perfect thing for Don't Be That Guy?
Oh, heck yeah.
Okay, so I knew a guy that he was, oh my gosh, I shoot my rifle twice a year, once to make sure it's sighted in and once to kill my buck. You know that guy, right?
I know that guy.
Everybody knows that guy. Don't be that guy. Go shoot your gun. You'll never know what it's capable of doing if you don't go shoot it.
Yeah.
So go shoot it. Use all that ammo that you just went and spent a bunch of money on to try to find out what shoots best in your gun, and actually go out and shoot it and take notes. I've got some really cool notebooks that I put together that you could record your data on. If you're interested in that, get a hold of me. I could send you some PDF files. You can print them out yourself, and you can record all the data that you'd ever want to know, and probably more than you even need on these things. And it's called DOPE, Data on Personal Equipment.
Cool.
Or Data on Previous Engagements, if you're a military guy, whatever you want to call it. Anyway, DOPE's the word.
I never actually knew what that word meant. I just knew people were like, yeah, dope.
Dope, yeah. Don't be a dope. Record your information. And then you'll be able to correlate, like, okay, so I shot really good this day with this load, and then the next day I didn't shoot good. What was the difference? Oh, it was like 105 degrees this other day, and probably what happened was your powder got exposed to that heat, and yeah, now your pressure's different, and your gun's all out of whack because it doesn't like to be in that particular groove. So to speak. So
yeah, tons of things can happen. And
yeah, you won't know.
Expansion and contraction of metals now.
Yep.
You've got all of these things in play.
All these variables, so yeah.
I guess that's why it's super important to log your data. Man, I should really start listening to you.
One more thing I want to add too. If you don't have time to go to the range, dry fire.
Yeah.
Just sit behind your rifle. Put a quarter on the muzzle. These things are like old school that nobody talks about anymore.
Yeah.
And just concentrate on your trigger press and trying to make that rifle pop without making that quarter fall.
You balance the quarter on?
Balance the quarter on the barrel.
Okay.
And try to fire it, dry fire it, put your ammunition far away. Again, safety first. Dry fire it and try to make the quarter stay on the muzzle.
Is it cheating if you have a flat muzzle brake?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to do it that way.
Man, pistol guys do it with just a pistol case. And they just put it on their slide and arms out and try to press through the whole trigger sequence without making that cartridge fall off. And you can do the same thing with your rifle. If you want to use a dime because it's smaller and easier to balance with a dime, use a dime. Work up to a quarter.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I've never...
Dry fire practice is awesome.
Would a laser work, perhaps? A guy could like rubber band a laser onto his rifle?
They make these laser trainers for pistols. I haven't seen one for a rifle.
Right, but I'm just saying, if you put a target, say like we're sitting in Aaron's shop here, if you were to put a target on the wall right there,
mm-hmm,
and just rubber band a laser, say onto your rifle, and just watch that target through your scope.
Yeah, set up your iPhone like on slow-mo too.
Yeah, and watch yourself.
You'd be amazed. Yeah, and even the whip of the barrel too, just by dry firing it. We talked about that in the last podcast. The harmonics that are happening when you fire a gun, that firing pin's crashing into the back of the bolt, and it's creating a vibration, and the metal has a certain pitch that it's going to vibrate to, like a tuning fork. And you could watch your barrel whip around, and you can see by...
With a dry fire?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
Huh.
It's pretty neat stuff.
Dude, I never would have thought that little tick... When you dry fire a rifle, I guess there's a lot of pressure on that firing pin, though.
Yeah.
I never would have thought that you could watch a barrel. I mean, it's not going to be a huge whip, right?
The further away you get it, you'll be able to see it better, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, you'll be able to see that.
That's crazy. With a dry fire. No bullet. With a dry fire,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Oh, yeah. When you do that, point your gun in a safe direction. I feel like we're just treading on super thin ice right now. Like, we've got to keep saying this.
Oh, man.
Because next thing you know, somebody's gonna myself up because of the Bohag podcast.
Oh, gosh.
And then, like, somebody, some judge somewhere is going to be like, whoa, you were talking about guns and you're called the Bohag podcast, so you're going to jail or something. I'm too small to go to jail, man.
Me too, I hope.
Yeah.
Yeah, dry fire, good practice. When you do practice for real at the range, try some things like a ladder test, a box test. If you're not familiar with those, you could find information, again, on the internet. But be careful about who you get your information from.
Dude, you need a YouTube page.
I guess I do.
You seriously need a YouTube page.
My buddy Joe, from the West Coast Predator Hunting. Have you seen his stuff?
No.
You need to go to his Instagram and check out his stuff. He's got some YouTube videos too.
Really?
Yes. Super cool guy.
Huh.
Way cool guy. So he might be coming up here in a month or so.
Sweet.
And doing some coyote shooting or shooting something anyway.
Yeah, rocks.
Yeah, super cool guy. Man, what were we just talking about?
Dry firing. YouTube videos, maybe.
Oh, yeah, you were saying make some YouTube videos.
Yeah, you need a YouTube channel.
Yes, Joe, West Coast Predator Hunting, wants to help make some YouTube videos. So hopefully that can happen. That would be super cool.
Yeah, I think you need to because there's a lot of bad information out there. You could put a lot of good information out there.
I hope so. Or maybe you'll just get lost in all the mix.
Decent information. It probably will, dude. Everything gets lost in the mix. It's so flooded. You got any more on your bag of tricks over there? What do you got?
I think that pretty much does it. Yeah. You want to add anything?
No, my big thing was going to be kind of the same thing. Like, yeah, we're improving our rifles, but we still need to improve ourselves, right? So, like, I got a nice rifle, but if I don't shoot it, it's worthless.
Yeah.
And if I don't practice, because, I mean, I'll get deep with it on this one, you guys. I have, like, the world's worst buck fever. I mean, like, I shoot some stuff, but I miss, I think I said this in my last podcast, I miss, like, 5 animals for everything I kill. Not with a gun, really. I'm normally pretty good with a gun, but, like, with a bow, at least. And I shoot my bow, like, 8,000 times a year, maybe 5,000 times a year. I don't know. I calculate if you shoot like 15 arrows a day, you shoot almost 5,000. That would be what, like 5,100 times a year.
That's a lot of arrows.
Yeah. So you shoot that many times with your bow. A lot of you guys shoot bows. You know, you can still be super inaccurate. Think about it with a rifle. Like, we just take that for granted because you have crosshairs and a trigger. 5,475. That's how many times. I was close. 5,100. So I'm just saying, like, making sure all of your gear is tuned up, big deal. But making sure that the number one piece of gear, which is
you,
is tuned up is a bigger deal because you could hand, you know, what's the old thing about the carpenter? You can give somebody a golden hammer and they can't build a house, but you can give like a real carpenter a cheap hammer and they can build you something beautiful.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
I could grab one of Aaron's rifles and shoot it like crap, and Aaron can grab my cheap 25-06 and probably shoot it great. You know, if my equipment's tuned and his equipment's tuned.
One of my favorite things to do is to take, I have a $200 Stevens Model 200 in 308.
Yeah.
It's basically a Savage. And I love to take it to the range and shoot one whole groups with it because it's basically stock. I put a trigger in it. I put a Rifle Basics trigger. It was like an $80 upgrade.
Yeah.
It took a little bit of messing around to get it adjusted just right. But I did all these other things that we just talked about. I run good ammunition in it. All the screws are torqued and Loctited down. I've leveled my crosshairs. I have a bubble level that is level to the scope,
mm-hmm.
which is level to the base, which is something, I'm sorry, we missed that. You can level your scope, but if your rifle isn't leveled when you're shooting it, you're still going to encounter the same problem with, you know, drift to one side or the other, depending on the cant. So buy yourself a $30 or $40 bubble level,
mm-hmm.
and level it to the scope and level the scope to the base of your rifle. And you will pick up, your groups will improve so much better. I thought it was a bunch of hooey. I started seeing it shooting F-class. This was many years ago, and saw these bubble levels and said, what the heck are these things and how is this going to help me shoot? I was really resistant to it. I was a skeptic, and I finally got a hold of one, and I actually noticed my scores improve because I was without a doubt holding my rifle perfectly level from one shot to the next. And what is accuracy?
Consistency.
Yeah.
Woo, Rush is right.
There you go.
Yeah, I put one on my 28 and instantly bought one for my other rifles because I was noticing the same thing. Like, I was shooting, I think we were shooting like 1,000 yards, 980-something. And I was hitting the plate, but nowhere near where I needed to be hitting the plate at. And I was like, what the heck? So, of course, I'm holding the rifle the same way each time. The way it's bagged in and it's on a bipod. And so I'm holding the rifle the same way. Oh, that's another thing. Make sure when you're shooting these things, you're either, you know, bagged in or in a lead sled or something where you can hold consistently. You're not whacking that trigger. You're squeezing through and everything when you're doing these load tests and stuff.
And that comes with practice.
Yeah.
The fundamentals. I did have that written down, but I didn't mention it. Some awesome information comes straight from our military. You can go to like an Army surplus store and you can buy the rifle training manual, and it'll give you all of the positional shooting fundamentals. Like if you're shooting prone, where to position your hips and your shoulders and your legs and your knees and your ankles in relationship to the axis of the bore and the target, and basically build a position that is almost infallible. Once you get the position down and you get good basics, you can get behind the rifle and it will naturally point to the target, so you're not pulling it around. And anyway, another rabbit hole, get yourself some good reading material, stuff from like David Tubb. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's like world-renowned marksman. I mean, the guy's ridiculous. He's probably won more competitions than anybody else, or everybody put together. The guy's a beast. He writes lots of books now. He's kind of in retirement. But you could read up on all of this stuff. And a mindset, Royce mentioned, you know, he gets buck fever. Putting your, and this is kind of like self-help stuff, but like having a mindset too, like looking at the target, I'm going to put my bullet right there, bang.
Yeah.
And then follow through, and where did the bullet go? Why did it not go there? Right. What did I do?
Right.
Change, try again.
Cool. I like it. So I think we covered, I mean, like, that's pretty much the I mean, what you can do without spending a lot of money. Yeah, we're talking nine bucks for some JB Weld, and
yeah, a couple bucks for some Loctite.
You can get, I mean, and really, if you wanted to get a setup to lap your rings, you could go to like a metal shop and get like a piece of Dom tubing, and thread it.
It would be more expensive, but I would say get some like cold rolled.
Cold rolled.
The thing is though, if you have like a 30mm scope tube, that's going to be hard.
Because
nobody's going to carry 30 mil. You'd have to get it turned down by a machinist or something like that.
Yeah, and those guys are, you know, you can't trust a machinist.
Yeah, they can be pretty fickle sometimes.
Yeah, those guys. So, guys, if you have any other questions based on what we talked about today, I feel like we hit all the points pretty well. I mean, I know it seems vague. We're just like, hey, do this, do that. You might not know what it is, but definitely, I mean, take some notes, write this stuff down. Go watch some videos, read some stuff on forums, check out what people are doing, follow those trends, do it step by step. Don't get too deep into the project.
I guess that's the biggest thing to take away from this, is there are so many different things that you can do, but do them incrementally, do them one step at a time, and go and test and see if it helped or if it didn't help, and then go to the next step. Don't do 10 things at once, because you'll never know what actually helped.
Yeah, that's a big thing with reloading.
Yeah,
it's huge, and we're gonna do a reloading episode.
We'll do just a reloading episode.
Reloading, and it's probably gonna be two parts.
It's probably gonna be many parts. We're gonna
need beer.
I think we'll have to focus on like one step. You know, like case prep and then powder charges. And
yeah, like a mini seating, like a few mini series maybe.
Yeah, and if you guys have ideas on stuff too, let us know, because we are very receptive to that. We want to give you guys what you want to hear. I don't want to try to cram a bunch of crap down your ears.
Yeah, so reach out to either one of us on that. And if you want to contact Aaron, it's Tierney_arms_company on Instagram. That's Tierney_arms_company. You can email him at tarmsco@gmail.com. If you got any questions, and soon to be YouTube channel, I'm going to force you into that. And then you guys know how to get a hold of me. It's not that hard. Nobody ever does, though.
I know. It's really funny.
Dude, it's messed up. Nobody ever, like...
Social media, man.
Yeah, man. But, guys, definitely if you enjoyed this episode, please go give it a review. It helps out the podcast a ton. Makes it more discoverable. More people can find it. Get all kinds of cool, awesome information from guys like Aaron, who are... Man, I just had a good word. I'm going to go with good. Good at what they do. So, thanks guys for listening to this episode of the Bowhike Podcast. We're out of here. Bye.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. I know I did. There's a few things I'm going to do to a couple of rifles in my safe. Just reminded me I need to go through and tighten all that stuff up and Loctite some things, probably oil my guns again. Definitely an informational one. Go check out Aaron's stuff. Like we talked about, I'm going to try and get that guy on YouTube because he's too good not to be. If you guys are interested in hats still, I'm still selling hats. They still look kind of cool. Just put in a new order, so inventory should be up here soon. I'm working on getting my website launched to where you'll be able to order straight off there. And it'll just be cool to have a website. So when that's up, I'll definitely let you guys know. If you have any other questions regarding the topics we covered today or regarding anything you want to ask me, you guys know how to get in contact with me. Instagram, The Bowhike Podcast on Instagram, The Bowhike Podcast on Facebook, Royce Chambers on YouTube, and you can always, always email me, RoyceChambers116@gmail.com. I will not take up any more time out of your day. That is all I have for you. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. I lied. I will take up more time out of your day. Go give the podcast a 5-star review and a comment. Can't tell you why, but there is some stuff coming up here that you're definitely going to want to have your name in the hat for. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so, so much. Until next week, I'm Royce Chambers, signing off. Bye.